I think it's also because my mommy, she gave me so much advice. My mommy was like, don't let people see you sweat.
Yeah.
Don't let them see you in a panic.
Yeah.
And she always used to be like, people, like, this is our issues. People don't need to know.
Hi, you're listening to Bake the Podcast, brought to you by Satiskin. Today, I chat to Andrew Murphy, my very good friend and social media influencer. We chat to Andrew about running his own cafe, self-discovery, and everything in between. Let's get into it with Andrew. Today, we have a really awesome guest in our studio. It's Andrew Murphy, one of my very good friends, social media influencer, cafe owner, and so much more. So we're going to chat to Andrew about everything he wants to talk about. Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I think the first thing I want to get into is, would you consider yourself a micro-influencer?
You know, I suppose I would, but the thing is, I also just prefer the term content creator.
Okay.
I hate
the word influencer.
Yeah, because just like I realize that is my passion. Like that's my thing. I really just enjoy making content.
Yeah. And what is like the basis for those who don't know about you yet? What's like the basis of your content?
Fashion, lifestyle. I'm a little bit edgy. I'm a little bit basic also sometimes. So
no, you're never basic.
Let's say beggy. It's like a good combo of beggy.
No, I think you're totally edgy.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I like mixing it up. I like wearing girl clothes sometimes.
Yeah.
That was like my number one mission statement in the beginning, was just promoting the fact that guys can also wear girl clothes.
Yeah.
And guys can shop in the female department also.
Yeah.
Because when I was like brave enough to do it, I realized like, yo, a lot of people are looking at me funny.
Really?
Yeah, in the shops.
But I feel like your style's quite androgynous. It's not necessarily feminine or masculine. It's kind of like tethering on the on both.
But you see, that's the thing. It actually took a long time for me to get to that point because I was, I tried out a whole lot of styles and it didn't work for me. But I know that I needed to go through that.
Styles? What is your worst phase?
Oh, my worst phase was maybe like last year. I was super extra. I was just too much, like patent leather pants and fur coats. And that was like a bit too much for me. I enjoyed it at the time. I think I needed to go through it.
But also your hair was way longer.
Yes. And I also went through that whole phase of like growing my hair, curly hair, big bushy hair. That was my thing. But when I look back now, I'm just like, oh, gross. But I'm glad
you feel like you go through like a style evolution as a person?
Yes. I think I do believe that it needs to change all the time. I'm happy that, like I said, I'm happy that I went through it. Mm. I needed to go through it to realize. But yeah, that was the thing at that time. But I'm past it
now. Was that your least favorite of your fashion phases?
My least favorite was campus wear.
Campus wear chic.
Yeah, campus wear. I literally used to wear shorts, vests, and shoes.
No, I can't even picture it.
I was that guy. Like, shorts, vest, ripped shorts.
Like a white guy.
Basically like a white guy.
I used to wonder, like, these white guys on campus would wear flip-flops and shorts and then hoodie. And that was, like, the entire winter uniform. And then in summer, it was the exact same outfit. Sans hoodie, like there was no hoodie, but I'm wearing the same look. I never understood it. I'm like, how are you warm? Like, how are you not getting cold?
No, I think it's a legit thing that white people don't feel the cold.
Yeah,
and I can say this because I am dating a white guy.
Yes.
So I can say it. It's so funny because I'm actually trying to like redesign my style.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say redesign my style, but more maybe just like shifting it to something else.
Okay,
like I really enjoy testing different things.
Yeah,
and trying out new styles, new aesthetics, new silhouettes.
Yeah.
So I played with something actually last week Wednesday, which was kind of like baggy pants, oversized shirt. And it's so funny because I felt super uncomfortable, but I received like amazing feedback on social media.
Why did Instagram. You feel uncomfortable?
Because it's not what I'm used to. I'm used to like something skinny and then like at the bottom maybe and then something oversized on top.
So did you feel self-conscious, would you say?
I wouldn't say I felt self-conscious because I also just learned to own everything about myself.
Yeah.
And so if I maybe feel uncomfortable about an outfit, I know that my attitude needs to make up for what's lacking in the outfit.
Okay.
But I wouldn't say like I felt self-conscious about the outfit or myself per se. I always get anxious, actually. Mm. I always get nervous, anxious. But
why do you think you're an anxious person? Because I always like wonder, where did my anxiety come from? Because I also get anxious.
I think my anxiety and my just being anxious stems from being bullied when I was younger. It was like quite a hectic thing. I actually had to move schools because of being bullied.
Okay, wait. Now we have to go down this road.
Okay.
If you don't
mind.
It's
this road.
Let's go down this road.
I don't mind.
So how old were you when you were being bullied?
Yo, I can't even remember. Ever since I can remember, I was being bullied. You know,
was it because of your sexuality?
Yeah, and just because I was always the way, like I am now, I was always like that. And I think that's how my mommy always, I wouldn't say she knew, but okay, she did know.
Yeah.
Moms definitely know.
Yeah.
But I was always how I am. I'm a little bit feminine. Actually, not a little bit. I'm feminine. And it was just like a big thing in primary school.
Yeah.
Because obviously I was different. So everybody was like, oh, he's a morphe. And yo, that was like a big word.
Yeah.
And it just stemmed from there. And I wouldn't keep quiet.
Did you know at that time that you were gay in your like soul?
I wouldn't say I knew in my soul. I knew that I was different. And also my mommy made it very clear to me from a young age. Yeah. Like, you're going to go to school, or you're going to go to this thing, or you're going to be in this concert, and you're not going to be everybody's cup of tea.
Yeah.
And she was like, some people are going to...
Like, she prepped you.
Yeah, she prepped me big time. She told me, people are nasty. People get mean. So you need to have thick skin. And I think from there, I always knew. Even my mom, like, I think I accepted it more because my mom was like, just be prepared.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, you know what? I had this feeling, and now my mom's reassuring me that I am different and that it is okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think because the fact that I owned it, I never shied away from it. Although in grade 10, I did date a girl for a year. Just because
I thought
a whole year. Just because I thought it was normal. Yeah. I thought it needed to be a thing.
Yeah. Like go through the phase of dating a woman and...
Yeah. But other than that, I always just accepted who I am.
Yeah.
Wait,
so your girlfriend at the time...
Yes.
Did she suspect that you were gay? Did you think you were bi?
You know, the thing is, at that time, I don't think labels were such a big thing at 17 years old. Also, at that time in 2011, 2010, I don't think labels were such a big thing. I think it wasn't so much of like, oh, I know he's gay, but I'm going to date him anyway. It was more of just like, everybody else is doing it, so let me do it as well.
I need a boyfriend and you need to pay up.
Exactly.
You're saying that the bullying sort of started in primary school and then moved into high school, and then you kind of tried to assimilate and like be a part of the crowd. So when did you break out and like really just accept who you are?
So from grade R to maybe, let's say, grade 4, I was at a school that's in my area. And then something happened. Well, I was being bullied like a lot there. Yeah. And then something really bad happened. I got like physically beat up.
What?
And then my dad
like,
came.
Like, what did this kid do?
Just hit me.
Like a grade 4 kid?
Yeah, like tripped me while we were walking home.
How can you be so evil?
I know. While we were walking home, tripped me and then just... I think kicked me and punched me. I can't even remember. I think I blocked that whole memory out.
Yeah.
And then obviously I told my dad, and then my dad came to school, and then it became a big thing, because then it was like, oh, and like stuff happens at school, and then Andrew goes home and he goes to like pimp to his parents.
Yeah.
And then his parents come to school.
For those who don't know what pimp is, will people not know what pimp is? Maybe.
I don't know.
Pimp is like tell on.
I don't even know the English word. I just say pimp.
Pimp is like, oh, it's got such power, that word.
It does.
It's like telling on someone, but it's more powerful.
A tattletale.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And then obviously it became a big thing when my daddy came to school, because then this child got called out of class.
Yeah.
And then he went and told all these kids. And then they came and attacked me. Then I moved to Rondebosch East Primary School. And that's where I found like it was okay.
Yeah.
To be who I am, because they embraced like the whole arts and culture thing, because the principal at the time was super into music.
Yeah.
So he was like I wouldn't say he was the head of music, but he was really for the arts and the crafts.
And were you singing at that time?
I was singing at the time. I was Ryan in the High School Musical play.
Oh my gosh.
Very that, yeah. So.
And you're obviously singing at church, which you still do, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I also became deputy head boy there. So that was like a super.
I was deputy head girl.
Really?
Yes, at high school.
Primary school or high school?
Mountain Road Primary. I went to Mountain Road. And then I was, deputy head girl.
Don't you feel like that makes you, I wouldn't say it makes you feel above everybody else, but it definitely gives you like that extra boost of confidence, especially when you're going into high school.
Yeah, when I went to high school, I thought I was like the shiz, because I was like, okay, I've been deputy at my school, like, I got this.
But I mean, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
I think being arrogant about it is maybe a little bit bad, but like having like this confidence is a good thing, especially because when you go into high school, you go into grade 8 and you become the junior again. And then you need to like look up to the seniors. So like having that, having like that extra chip on your shoulder maybe is a good thing. Yeah.
I don't know. For me with high school, like I had a massive culture shock because I came from a predominantly colored school. And I was supposed to go to this other school called Good Hope Girls Seminary. And I went there for like 3 days. And then my dad got me into my school, which is a private all-girls school. And it's a white school. So, and I'd never interacted with white kids before. Like, it was such a weird thing to even think about. But then when I got to school, there was like only white kids and like one other colored girl. So I was like really intimidated and like, I don't know. So being, having that role of like deputy girl and like having that almost bragging rights in the beginning of grade 8, it's like, oh yeah, I was deputy girl at my school. Kind of did help, although the girls at the school didn't know what that meant because they didn't have it at the primary school.
Okay.
So it was kind of hard, yeah.
Yeah. But how was it, how was it adjusting to?
I think it took me like 8 months to adjust.
Being the minority.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like felt insecure with my accent. I felt insecure with my hair. I felt insecure with the color of my skin.
Yes.
I was like, also I was way more, my mom is very conservative as a Muslim woman. So she didn't name my dress like above the knee. So my dress was like in my calf region. Okay.
So then it became like a cultural thing as well. So
and
that
then,
was
like, everyone's like, why is your skirt so long? Like, what the hell? Like, you look weird. And then I was like, mommy, why did you do this to me? Like, I was like crying because I was like, why did you embarrass me? And then she went, took me to my granny to hem my skirt shorter because she was like, I was just really struggling to fit in. So then there was that. And then like eventually my mom used to take me like for coffee at break time. And like,
so she'd like fit you during break and then take you and bring you back.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so
and,
cute.
Like, take me for coffee at Garden Center. And then bring me back. She was like my only friend for 8 months. I think she loved it, low key. She was like,
she's like, quality time with my daughter.
I know, because like, what teenager wants to spend time with their mom?
Yeah.
And then I met my friend Shannon, who's my best friend. And then she was like, just be who you are. Like, you colored. This is how you speak. And I was like, okay. And when even anyone would tell me, like, why do you roll your R's like that? Or like, why do you say pizza and not pizza? Then I'd be like, because I'm colored and this is how I speak.
Yes, good. Own it. Yeah.
Yeah, but it took me like 8 months.
Yes.
Yeah.
But coming back to the thing that you said about the accent, when I started dating Matt, that was like 2015. For some reason, like, my culture didn't bother me. Like, the traditions that we've got in the colored community, like, the area that I came from, all of those things didn't bother me. It was my accent that bothered me the most. And I felt the need to, like, change my accent and how I speak and the words that I use, because for some reason, like, the colored accent is seen as less than or uneducated or something like that.
Don't you hate that?
I do hate it. And you know what?
And don't you feel like we sometimes perpetuate that as the colored community?
Yes.
Like, we'll be like, oh, this person's plat.
Sounds ham.
Yes, ham. Yeah, I try not to even, like, obviously, we come from a community where those kind of phrases are used, but now I try not to say those kind of things.
Yes.
It's like, it's just an accent.
Yes.
It doesn't mean anything. Like, you're not less educated or less
And for me, it hit even harder because I studied linguistics at varsity. So, the whole point of, like, my studies was to promote the fact that all dialects of languages should be considered a language. Like, why? Because the colored sound different to the whites. Is that not, like, why can't those slang words or compass style be used as a language? And if I felt so stupid, like, trying to change my accent, and then eventually I was just like, you know what, it's part of who I am.
It's like a rite of passage to try to change your accent. I think as a colored child who's like assimilating in a white community, like, Wayne also talks about him going through that in Port Elizabeth, and like, his friends always make fun of him about it because they're like, oh, remember when he used to speak like a white guy? And he's like, oh yeah, I used to want to be white, like, for one moment in my life, because he kind of looks whitish.
He does,
and the cusp of white.
Yeah.
So
because his hair is also like a bit light.
Yeah, but he's got like definitely a colored texture, but like that light brown, and then he's got his eyes, like, he kind of looks white. So then he tried to like have a white accent, and I definitely also did it. My my sister, like, full on had like a, she only lost that accent like 2 years ago.
Really? Maybe
4 years ago. So, yeah. Because she also tried to fit in, obviously. Yeah. And it's so like funny, like the like all, you know, the thought process behind that. And like, I don't know about you, but like my grandparents were really proud of us because we had this like accent.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, these are our clever grandkids.
It's like a white thing.
Yes.
They're closer to white than they are to colored, so that must mean good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which I think like it's really important for us like as the community to sort of undo the, that kind of thinking.
Yeah.
I'm definitely trying to undo it like in my own mind.
Yeah.
And in my like relationship as well. Like Bonnie and I now speak. Well, Bonnie doesn't know how to speak Cape Town. I call it Cape Afrikaans. Because in PE, they speak like proper Afrikaans.
Yes.
And now, like, we obviously, we've been together for 6 years, so I kind of taught him.
Yeah.
And now we speak it with pride. We're like...
But he still, like, pulls out those words.
Yes, he does. Where he's like, let me think. Oh, like, he won't say boom, he'll say boom.
Boom, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, the boom. And I'm like, you mean the boom. So let's talk about, like, the different sides of your career.
Yo, it's a lot, eh?
Yeah.
So... I first started off with Matt as a swimming instructor.
Yeah.
And then I...
Shout out to Matt.
And then the two of us moved on to the coffee shop called Hot Mill Coffee Shop. It was born out of the... Like, us just going to a lot of coffee shops, spending all our time there because the... Obviously, teaching is not whole day, every day.
Yeah.
It's certain days because there are a lot of other coaches.
Yeah.
So, we did find ourselves having a lot of free time. Well, not free time, but like time to do admin.
Yeah.
And then we were like, why not do admin in our own coffee shop?
Yeah.
And then we were like, let's look for a space. And then the idea almost like died down because we really struggled to find a space. And then this one day we were sitting in a coffee shop. And then Matt was like, oh my gosh, Andrew, there's this place in Warmer Estate. And on that day, we went to go look at it. And then it was actually this lady who had a coffee shop already and she needed someone to take over the lease. And then we were like, amazing, we'll do it.
Mm.
And then we actually bought quite a few of her stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I also at the same time really wanted to get into content creating. But that's actually a funny story because I was creating content from a young, like way before already. I had like a YouTube channel.
Oh, really? Mm. What did you do on your channel?
Just talk a whole lot of rubbish.
Like what?
So I'd be like, it's actually funny. I'd be like, how you know you're colored?
Oh, okay.
Be like 10 reasons you know you're colored. And I'll
like
be like,
TikTok if vibes.
Yeah. So like if you use the pick and pay bag as a bin and you don't have a bin. Or if you only skirt with a 2 rand lighter and not like a clipper. Like that. So that was the content. It was very inspired by Mark Fitzgibbon. I don't know if you know him.
Yes, I do know him.
Yes. Mark. Yeah. And then it just became like those three main things.
Mm.
And then it was the coffee shop. It was the
YouTube.
Swimming instructor. And then... creating content for social media.
Your content creator hat, how do you feel like that's been impacted, like with things changing now?
So I actually drafted quite a few pitches in the last 2 weeks maybe. And
because you guys shoot on the weekends, right?
Yeah. So but I mean like campaign pitches to brands.
Okay.
Yeah, so obviously I need to target my pitches to a very specific brand because I am still a very small content creator, so it really needs to like be bomb.
Yeah.
So now I'm actually a little bit scared to send it out because I'm just like, you need to go out to shoot.
Mm.
You need to maybe collect a product.
Yeah.
You need a post, and is it insensitive to post at this time?
I don't know. Like, it's such a good question. I was thinking about this as well. Is it insensitive to post in the time of Corona? I think that. Like, it's not because people need entertainment. Like, I don't know. I've been home the last 2 days.
And what do you do? You go on your phone.
Yeah. Because there's nothing to do and you almost feel disconnected from people. Like, with you guys, for example, we used to see you, like,
every second day.
All the time. And now it's, like, social distancing, so you can't see your friends anymore. Like, I get bored watching Netflix. I want to, like, see real people doing things. Like, so it's almost like Instagram, it used to be this really negative space for me where I felt like I was, especially after having college, where I was always comparing myself to, like, other content creators and what are they doing. Now I feel like, oh my god, I'm just like, I just want to see people that I know doing cool things and like admiring their looks or like how are they creating content in their own homes. That's like one of those things where I'm like thinking, you know, do we get some paint and like repaint the house just to create content inside of
keep us all busy.
Yeah, because I saw one of these bloggers from content creators from the States, she was posting things on like skincare routines and like books that she's reading, and she did like her entire feed, like her 15 pictures were like all white and like cream, like zen cute. Looks, you know.
Who is this?
Marianne. Shoot, I forgot her surname.
I know.
I'll have to send it to you later.
Yeah, you can. Her name's Marianne. I don't know that one actually.
Yeah, she's like a American Latino looking person.
Mm.
But yeah, so she's like changed her content to kind of go that route.
Okay.
And I think, like, you know, it's important for like smaller content creators not to get discouraged, because now work is drying up. But I think people still need to smile and look at something inspiring.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So let's just talk about your process of creating your content. So what is your process currently? And then obviously now it might change a little bit, but like how, because you have a day job.
Sometimes I feel it's a bit unnecessary because I am so small still.
Yeah.
So I just think to myself, like, do people think I'm an idiot? Do you think I'm like doing too much? Am I too extra?
Do you care what they think?
Not really, but I do. I do think about it sometimes when I'm like, when I'm saying it out loud, and then I'm like, oh wow, that's a lot. Like, you go through the most to create content. But it starts off like with an idea. Like, maybe I'll be walking in the shop and then I see a mannequin and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, that looks really nice. Let me design a whole shoot around that. Then I go home and I literally do like a mind map. I can literally show you in my book, there's a mind map.
Yeah.
And then I start saying like colors, location, outfit.
So you have like a physical mind map that you draw out?
Yeah. Oh, I literally do like a mind map.
Yeah.
And then I decide, am I going to use my clothes? Am I going to purchase the clothes? Or am I going to source?
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's also nice to plan a shoot and then you think of purchasing clothes, but it also needs to be items that you can rewear, and recycle and reuse all the time. And this is just like a
buy and return.
A buy and return situation. Yeah. And then I shoot, and then
so Matt shoots, edit. You don't
well,
shoot.
Well, yeah. Matt shoots for me and then we edit. And then for me, the hard part is not really creating the content. The hard part is posting and how it's gonna be received.
Yeah.
Because I do feel like I go through a lot of effort to create content, but it's never, I feel, appreciated. And that kind of annoys me.
It annoys me a lot as well with like regards to your content specifically, because I think I first got introduced to you by Lorinda Voges, and she was like, oh, we're working with this influencer because she was doing a campaign, and I was like, oh, easy. And then I went on your profile, I was like, oh my gosh, this content is amazing, like, why aren't more people following you? No, because it's like you put so much effort into it, and it shows, you know. But I also think like it's, you don't need to, like, for people who are starting out, it's like, not, you don't have to be negative about it, because I think things will develop from there. And the way things are going now, it's like campaigns from brands are not really going to come out as much as before. It's about like creating a personal brand and then launching something through that.
Yeah.
Like for you, I know you wanted to do a clothing line, or even your coffee shop, like you can advertise it on your page. You know?
Yeah. But I think for me, I don't think I feel discouraged when I don't get the
attention.
Not the attention, but like the
accolades, I don't know.
The interaction that I
engagement that I
wish I could have had. But I feel like most of the time, like 95% of the time, my content is very conceptualized. There's always a concept behind it.
Yeah.
And I share so much of how I feel and my take on things through my content.
Mm.
And then it really just annoys me when it's not relatable to other people, because then I think to myself, am I doing something wrong?
Yeah.
Is it coming from my side, or are people just, do they just want to see a pretty picture?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's the hard part about like creating content, I think, when it's like, especially when you're not doing it for money.
Yeah.
Like, you're doing it for passion. So then you're like, why is no one else seeing my passion that I have, you know, or that I'm trying to share.
Yes.
Which is hard. But I think it's definitely like still important. Like, we interviewed Nabila Karim yesterday, and we're talking about the way her content is almost similar to how you develop yours. And how it's so conceptual and so Vogue-like. And it's like almost needed in the space, because like the influencer space is inundated with like the, like a lot of average content with like high followers, and then you don't really get that quality, you know, and that's what you kind of crave.
Yeah. And you know what, I think last year and the year before, I focused so much on getting a lot of followers.
Yeah.
I focused so much on growing my following and just like overall engagement on my page. Mm. And now, like this year, it was more about just tapping into my creative side.
Yeah. But do you feel you have less pressure on yourself because you have a day job? You're not like trying to do it for money?
Yeah, because as if like that's not my only source of income. Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely, I feel maybe if it was my only source of income, I would be hustling.
Yeah.
I would be like out every day on the doorsteps of PR companies being like, give me this campaign.
Yeah.
You know?
But I also feel like that
handing out pamphlets.
Yeah. Like,
follow me on Instagram, please. I need the cash, Jola. But that's not the case. But like that's what I'm saying. I think maybe that's actually so true because I never thought about it, because maybe I find comfort in the fact that I do have a steady income.
Yeah.
And that now it's for me, it's easier to be like, let me focus on myself and my creativity. But other people who rely on this as a source of income actually need a hustle.
Yeah.
They need to like put themselves out there.
So what advice would you give to someone who's kind of like trying to get into where you are now? Maybe they're just starting out, they have a job that they love and they don't want to quit, but they do you want to maybe have a creative outlet? What would you like, and what advice would you give them to get started? Because I always get asked that question and I'm like, I don't know, just start.
I also don't know. I think it is just about starting.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's not for every Tom, Dick and Harry. You really need to have like a passion for being creative.
Yeah.
And I feel like just tap into that and know your aesthetic, know who you are. I think that's like the only thing that you can actually do, and the rest will follow. Because I'm realizing now, the more I actually focused on creating amazing content, and also like I wrote in my notes the other day, it was about paying attention to detail.
Yeah.
Because I would like post a picture, but then, and let's say the outfit was a shirt and a jeans, and then half the shirt is like sticking out.
Mm.
And it's those kind of small things that actually really make a picture or stronger. An image pop, you know? So like, and I know it sounds stupid, but it's really is just the full package, and something like an untied shoelace is not going to create that image.
Or don't you hate when people, like, especially with guys, it like irritates me when you have like your cell phone in your pocket and then you can like see the shape.
Look here, do you know like, how many times?
This is me off so bad. I'm like, you know, please take your cell phone out.
Do you know how many times I've had my DCT, that like round lip balm in my pocket, and I've shot with it and it's been sticking out, and then I just have to like.
It's like the equivalent of a hair tie on a girl's arm.
Oh, and that also happened to me so many times when I had my long hair.
Yes, your hair tie on your arm. Yeah. So you mentioned when you came in earlier that you were taking a little bit of a social media break. Why is that?
I get anxious really quickly. Like it will literally be like a car that just sped past me, and then I'm like stressed out. Yeah. I'm like in a panic. So just like
it's so weird for me that you say that, because you have the most calming energy ever. You really? Like seem like someone who never panics.
Really? Oh my gosh, that's a good thing. Because yeah, I think it's also because my mommy, she gave me so much advice. My mommy was like, don't let people see you sweat.
Yeah.
Don't let them see you in a panic.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think maybe also that stems from because we had like a crazy upbringing in our house. Like my parents fought a lot back in the day. But she always used to be like, people, like, this is our issues. People don't need to know in the outside world. And I think that also like my calming.
Yeah, you're like, I need to share my.
Comes from that, yeah.
With everyone. Yeah, gotcha.
P.S. All's good at home now.
Okay. I can see. So your parents look very much in love. What was I going to say? So, yeah, you're taking a break of social media. Is it like a week break or what are you doing?
I think maybe just a couple of days, because I know that, the panic might subside just a little bit. I'm not saying people mustn't panic. I'm just saying the panic will subside just slightly.
With regards to coronavirus.
Yes. And I would love to come back onto social media once that has subsided, because just seeing all these posts and everybody's ideas and thoughts and ideologies on this whole pandemic is freaking me out.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, you know, you're so like emotionally mature, because I don't think I even had the so basically what happened when the coronavirus before just like got bad in South Africa, we were supposed to move to the UK.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna miss you guys.
I know. No, you don't have to miss us.
So
I was deciding whether or not Khalid and I should go with Barney to the UK, because he's going there for work, and we'd planned the whole year that we're going to go away, and then this thing got bad, and then it's like making that decision for you and your child is so challenging. And then I was reading like all these tweets and like posts and whatever, And I got myself into flipping tears. Like, I literally was so anxious.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for going to KZN to our family friend's wedding where there was no cell phone reception, I probably would have, like, had a full-blown panic attack. Mm. It was so bad. And then I spent a weekend without my phone because I didn't have cell service, besides at night when we got home, which I didn't really want to go on my phone because I spent the whole day without it.
Mm.
And then I felt so much calmer. So it was like, I mean, I didn't have the sense that you had to just take a break. I was, yeah, like, going to just go full on into it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's so important. One of the things that I read was that how to manage your mental state during the coronavirus outbreak. Like, people were saying, like, say, please don't talk to me about coronavirus. I don't want to know about any articles you read. Log off of social media.
Yeah.
Like, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's important. Like, a nice, yeah, message to leave with people.
Yeah.
Like, to protect your own mental space. Yes. And know when to log off.
Yes. I think it would be stupid to ignore that it's there,
yeah,
or just like turn a blind eye, or if like I don't hear it, I don't see it, then it's not happening.
Mm.
I think it's obviously the smart thing to do would be to educate yourself, but yeah, I don't think that you need, like, for me personally, I feel like I don't need to get involved in the hype that's happening on social media.
Yeah,
because now everybody's like coming up with these theories that, oh, this is God's way of punishing people because, yeah, of Mother Nature. It's Earth's way of taking back, yeah, everything. And I'm just like, you know, it sounds stupid, but all those things like formulates in your head, and then you like come up with your own idea of what it is, and then, yeah, you stressed out and
really stress your, yeah, family out, so, your friends out.
Yeah. So I wouldn't say I'm running away from the virus. I'm running away from what's happening.
I hope you're running away from the virus, because I definitely am.
But I mean, we can't, because, yeah, if it happens, then it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, we have to wrap up because we've run out of time. Okay. So where can everyone follow you, please, Shree?
What is my handle?
It's at Andrew Murphy.
Oh, yes, at Andrew Murphy 94.
And yeah, thank you for speaking to us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And if you guys want to follow more of our podcast, you can find us on hashtag Bake the Podcast. You can find us on any podcast app, and then also on my website, www.bakedonline.co.za. And we'll catch you guys soon.
Ciao.
This is a POC podcast
powered by Blue Blood.